Rockwell Bibles builds heirloom custom quality Bibles using the finest premium cowhide and goatskin leathers that you won't find in any mass-produced Bible. Each one is handcrafted, and you can customize nearly every detail from the leather type and the stamping to page edges and liners. As a family-owned Christian business in the Ozarks, Adam, coming from a background in mechanical engineering, brings precision and top-tier build quality to every Bible. Whether you want to build a new Bible or extend the life of the one you already use, this is the place to go. Follow Rockwell Bibles on X, Instagram, or on Facebook to see examples of their work. And visit rockwallbibles.com to place a deposit for your custom Bible today. They also drop ready-made Bibles every Friday, but typically sell out quickly, so don't wait. Visit rockwallbibles.com. Welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. This ministry exists to provide coaching, resources, and events for pastors and church members. My name is Jared Sparks. Join me as I talk pastoral ministry, applied theology like manhood and womanhood, political theology, and cultural analysis with a little bit of hunting and fishing thrown in. I'm a husband, a father, and a pastor, and I'm here to remind you of the chief pastor and our King, Jesus. Hello and welcome to the Shepherd's Crook Podcast. Hope you guys are having a great day today. Talking to a new friend, somebody that's been helpful to me and has got some really cool things going on. His name is Adam Johnson with Rockwell Bibles. Adam, how's it going, man?
Hey, good, Jared. Thanks for having me on.
Heck yeah. Well, let's go ahead and pray and then looking forward to getting to know you a little bit.
Sounds great.
All right, Father, we just thank you for this time. I ask for blessing on this conversation as always. Thank you for brothers in Christ and for what you're doing in Adam's life. It's been a blessing to me and so many others as well, as we want to put quality Bibles in and have a quality Bible to be able to hand down to children or to someone or just have for a lifetime. And thank you for the work he's doing and the mind you've given him. And I ask for blessing now in this conversation. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, brother. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and then your family and then what you're doing with Rockwell.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, so my name's Adam Johnson, and I live in Ozark, Missouri, and I was born and raised here, and except for a short stint in Kansas City, we have four girls. So our oldest is five, then we have a four-year-old, a two-year-old, and a two-month-old. And so just kind of in the daily grind right now of taking care of the little ones and making Bibles and doing all that. So yeah, I started Rockwell Bibles. Let's see, this would have been at the beginning of 2023. So
okay.
I think I sold my first Bible and right around the beginning of that year, and then went full time with it actually last June. So we're coming up on about a year of doing it full time. So there's kind of a little over a year part-time work and kind of hustling, doing that as a side hustle, and then kind of took the plunge.
Super cool. When you were saying something about Kansas City, it broke up a little bit. Can you tell me again what you were doing in Kansas City? I guess you went to school there.
Yeah. Yep. So I finished college at UMKC in Kansas City and got a mechanical engineering degree and doing engineering work and did that for about 10 years. And the last 4 to 5 years of it was remote. And so we moved back during COVID time. We moved back home, or what felt like home, which was Ozark. And that was about the time we were having our first child and wanted to be near family and all that. And so COVID kind of was that thing that allowed me to move. You know, remote work wasn't a thing for us at all before that. And so we moved home and never thought we'd be able to kind of raise our family here, and then just started loving it. So
awesome. Very good. How big is Ozark? What's the population of your town?
You know, it's probably about 15,000, 16,000, somewhere in there. Springfield, Missouri is the closest, you know, sort of we're 10 minutes away from that. So it's a suburb of it, and it's about a 200,000 person city. So
right. Is Ozark, because when we go to Branson, we go, you know, through Current River, through Winona. I forget what the highways are that we always go on. And we come into there and then we go south after we get to Springfield. Is Ozark in between
Springfield and, okay, I know where Ozark is.
It is, yeah. If you've ever been to Lambert's Cafe, it's kind of what Ozark's, one of the things we're known for, you know. A lot of people stop there on the way down to Branson. They throw rolls at you, and so you may have stopped there. I live about 5 minutes from there.
Okay, very cool. And you're at church together with some friends of ours, with Brandon Lansdowne and with Matt Reynolds, I believe, as well, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, Coram Deo Reformed Church in Springfield.
Wonderful. So we nicknamed Brandon Lansdowne, I don't know if you've heard this or not, but Baywatch a few years ago on the river trip. There was a guy that was kind of in a precarious situation, and Brandon, you know, he's jacked as ever, you know, and he's wearing these red 5-inch inseam shorts like David Hasselhoff, and he dives in and swims out there and does this perfect rescue maneuver and swims this guy back, and we all were just kind of standing wide-eyed. And so he affectionately got named Baywatch Brandon that day.
I heard that, so I'll have to bring that up.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, so you've got this engineering degree. You're doing work in engineering. What happened where you started to think, you know, I like leather, I like the Bible? How did the whole beginning stages of Rockwell Bible start?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's like, it's one of those things, you know, I was in a professional career for a decade, so it's not like I was really looking for something to sort of take its place. I was happy, actually. This was exactly what I wanted to be doing. I was in a specialized field of finite element analysis, which is just a super niche even of mechanical engineering. And so, you know, what happened though was, whenever we had our fourth child, or actually this would have been our third, we would get 4 weeks off of work. And during that time, I just was kind of looking for something to do. It was the dead of winter. And of course, you know, I'm helping with the kids and all that, but there's some time there.
Yeah.
And so I was looking for, or just came across Rebound Bibles on, you know, on some social media, and kind of thought, oh, you know, maybe I could try that. And so I ordered some very basic tools and, you know, gave it a shot, and it turned out terribly, but it looked like a Bible.
Okay.
And so from there, I just kind of got the itch, and just wanted to, you know, make some for friends and stuff that were, you know, and they started getting a little bit better and all that. And then I got to where it was like, okay, I could probably start selling these a little bit, maybe do it on the side and make a Bible a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing that. And, you know, one thing led to another, and pretty soon the wait list was just getting longer and longer. And, you know, I had a close to a year long wait list for Bibles. Wow. And it was like, man, I've only been doing this for a year. And partly it's because I'm so slow at it. I've got a whole nother job and a bunch of kids. So they're not going, like, it's not a factory. But yeah, it just kind of naturally progressed one thing to the next.
Incredible. Incredible. So some of the challenges I would be thinking through that I'm sure you had to work through is, how do I get a print Bible that is going to be to the quality that the leather working on the outside is going to be? Where am I going to go to source these Bibles and get it so that the whole thing is premium and it's not just a cheap Bible on the inside with an expensive exterior? So, like, what were some of the challenges then of trying to find, you know, all your product and then bring it together? Because it sounds like to me that would be quite the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I started out, it was just doing custom orders only. So people would send me whatever Bible they wanted. So it could have been an older one that they had used for 20 years, or it could have been, you know, a brand new Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but during that time, I really kind of learned what was good and what wasn't. There's some cheaper Bibles that are actually really good for the price. And a lot of the publishers will do them. They'll make a premium edition and use the same text block in a cheaper edition.
Okay.
So I've just learned over time which ones, you know, work well. And those are the ones that I'll sell on my site.
Okay.
Ones that I found are, hey, these are really nice Bibles that are sort of worthy of a nice binding, yet they're not $300 to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Gotcha. So what, like, as far as the problem solving and the challenges that on your mechanical engineering side, how's that played into starting a business, running a business, piecing this all together? Because it seems kind of natural. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a similar thing.
Yeah, I think so. There's definitely, like, it's hard because you don't, like, keep track in your mind of, like, and what things am I using? But over time, I think just general problem solving, that's kind of what a new craft is all about, is you're gonna, most people, I think, they learn by doing the thing. Mm-hmm. And so I never got caught up in the, you know, I'm just gonna watch all sorts of videos and read all these books and stuff and never do it. But I really just started doing it. And over time, I would just piece by piece. Bible rebinding is about 50 tasks that you have to do, but you got to do them really well, each one, or else it just adds up to not a very good product. So You just got to take an inventory of what was working well and what wasn't, and the processes and the tools and finding materials. And over time, just kind of building upon, the last mistake that I made. And I'm still learning things to this day, I would say.
Very cool. A while back, you shared I think it was an X post where you were talking about the expense of a family Bible or just getting a Bible in your hands in history.
Oh, yeah.
And when you start talking about premium anything, I got some premium knives that I've paid. It's a buy once, cry once kind of price. And right. You buy it and you hold it in your hands and it gives you the fizz and you think, man, this is different. This is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sent me the Bible that I have that I've been preaching from, love it. I mean, it's been wonderful. The text block is phenomenal. The feel of it is phenomenal. Everything about it. Absolutely love. And it gives you that same kind of premium feeling where it's like, this is the fizz. But there are still some people, probably younger guys in particular, that think $300 or $400 for a Bible, that seems high, or $300 for a knife, that seems high.
Oh, sure.
When I can go get a buck knife at Walmart or something like that. Could you kind of walk through that image, if you remember it, of talking about the history of just the expense of the Bible and getting it into your hands and to where we are today?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, Bibles themselves, before the printing press, weren't really a thing that households had. And so I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was to the extent of, maybe 6 months' salary back in like the 16th, 17th century, even after, the printing press was involved. It was a very high expense. I mean, so it was really just kind of a high class type of thing to have a Bible. And it's gradually gone down over time through, innovation and different technological advances. But we've got it down to a point now where, people think over $20 for a Bible and they're like, that's crazy. I could go, order one and it does the job and, it looks just as good to me. And so, it's a mindset thing of whether you want something, you want to buy something that's going to last you for a long time, or whether you want to buy something that's, going to wear out in a few years and you're not going to be able to really pass down. Mm-hmm. So most Bible, I see a ton of them because people still send me, I do custom orders, and people will send me their old Bibles that are, even the nicer ones that they buy over time, they still hold up a lot better. Even the ones that are sort of broken.
Yeah.
They're worthy of sort of a restoration. And then there's some that you see and the paper's all swelled up from humidity because it was cheap paper and it almost just can't even be restored.
Yeah.
So it's definitely one of those things, you get what you pay for on a Bible, just like it would be a knife or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I have several of the Crossway premium Bibles, the ESV. This is my preaching Bible that I've used since 2011. And one time I left it on top of my Jeep and I was driving to the church building. I dropped this and my iPad. My iPad shattered. This was on the highway. And it's a highway with a speed limit of 60 or 55 or 60. And it got ran over. And I got it. And nothing broke. There wasn't a single penny that was ripped out. But one of the things I've noticed about the difference between a Rock Wall Bible and even the Crossway is that if you look at things like the ribbons on this, and mm-hmm. I've got a Creeds and Confessions premium, I've got a KJV premium, I've got another larger ESV preaching premium, and everything except the outside feels cheap. And then with yours, the ribbons, the quality of the ribbons and the thickness mm-hmm. and the weight of the ribbons, it's a total difference. And a part of what I love about this one is just, I mean, the ribbons are phenomenal.
Yeah.
I don't know how you ended up arriving at that, but I do have a premium NASB 95 somewhere. and the ribbons are a little bit thicker, but the quality of materials are phenomenal on this.
So
how did you go about designing that sort of thing and even saying, okay, I'm going to get a thicker, bigger ribbon?
Man, that was one of the hardest, honestly, was like finding out what materials are going to work best. Because there's tons of materials on that Bible. Some of them you see, like the ribbons and obviously the leather and that stuff. But even like the gold foil that we'll use to stamp on there, you know, we use the highest quality stuff like that. And there was a lot of trial and error on that and ordering different things. Ribbons specifically, there is a gold standard, which are Beresford's ribbons, 10 millimeter from the UK. So that's really the only place you can get them. You can't even go on Amazon to buy them. So, you know, if I run out of a ribbon or something and I need to do it for a Bible, it's a big problem because it takes, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to get over here.
Okay.
But yeah, it was just researching what people are using. It's not really easy to find.
Hmm.
And so there's a few other people. I mean, I'm not the pioneer of doing Bible rebinding by any means. There's some other people, and there's some other people who do it full time. And so just trying to some degree to model them, but also have my own style, my own flair with it.
Yeah. Well, you've done a great job kind of differentiating yourself. I don't have any of the other premium Bibles from those guys, but yours is definitely one that stands out.
Right,
yeah, man. Great job. As far as the fear of jumping out into owning a business and jumping away from an engineering career, which I'm assuming you made good money, you had the security of everything that comes with mm-hmm. with a company, retirement or a pension, and high salary.
Yeah.
And now you're looking over here and it's like, man, I'm on my own. So there's so many guys that want to do what you're doing, but there's that fear of jumping from what's secure to the land of the unknown. What was that like as you're talking to your wife, like, honey, I think we can do this, and your parents or your in-laws, like, I think I'm going to do this with all that risk that's involved. What was that like?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a pretty calculated guy. So, but you never know. You really just never know what's going to happen. So it was a difficult decision for sure. Some of the things that sort of led to it were, you know, I had been working remotely. And over the course of you know, the 9 years I was in at this particular company, I had, you know, been promoted. I was a senior mechanical engineer. And past that, it was sort of, hey, you really kind of have to design your own career path. So you can go into management and different things. And I was at that point where that's the next step. You know, it's leadership roles and that sort of thing. But I was working remotely 3 hours away. And so there were some positions that I applied for that, you know, I was passed over because they weren't looking to go for a remote position. And that was something I knew whenever we left Kansas City. It was like, you know, this isn't the best career move, but for our lives and where we want to raise our kids and be near family and things, you know, that it was the right decision for us. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of felt this like, man, I could just stay here for the next 30 years and it's comfortable and it's, you know, I'll make a good paycheck and be able to retire at, you know, 60 or whatever. But I just, the drive, you know, wasn't there in that current career.
Yeah.
So I kind of could feel like, and I feel like I need to put my mind and effort into something. And so it got to a point where the numbers started to make sense as far as going over and starting the business, doing it full time, just because mostly I had the orders there and I had the customers, but it was like, how many can you even make in a week? Cause you got it. I mean, we really got to make a lot of Bibles to be able to afford life. You know, it's expensive.
Right.
With four kids, you know? So I got to a point where, you know, I was able to make enough and hire an employee and,
awesome.
And this is what the numbers were going to look like. So I started talking to my wife about it and some close friends and, you know, just trying to weigh each side of it. And the fallback for me, you know, honestly, that didn't feel like as big a risk was, you know, I'm 10 years in. If I try this and fail, you know, we've got a little bit of money saved. Like, we're not going to be out on the street or anything. And I can still go back, you know, I could still go find a job somewhere. So that was sort of in my own mind, the plan B was, you know, I can always go back, or if it's not working out like I thought, we can do that. If I had been 3 years into the career and just like establishing myself, and all that, and didn't have as much, you know, money saved, not as much cushion, that sort of thing, it would have been way more difficult, mm-hmm. I gotta say. And I'm not sure, if I would have done it. That's what.
Yeah. Well, you're in a situation a lot of guys want to be in, to be able to build a business, build a company, and also not just working from your home, but the idea of I've got something tangible that I can raise my children up in as well.
Yeah.
And how does that play in? I don't know what your age range is with your children, but I mean, is that, that on your mind as well? Like, I want to have something that, that I can invite my children up into if they're wanting to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, you know, it, and it's a little bit interesting. I have four girls.
Oh, okay.
So I would love, and they're young. They're five, you know, my oldest is five.
Okay.
And so.
Oh man, you had them boom, 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 boom. Riding
yeah. Them. We've had, yeah, five, let's see, they're five, four, two, and basically a newborn. So,
okay.
So yeah, it definitely has played a role. I wanted something that, you know, I could build, and I don't really have a built to sell type of a business though.
Mm-hmm.
Like it really is all built around like a woodworker would be or something. It's, I haven't transferred it over into like this process thing where I've trained a bunch of people and it runs on its own. It's everything I do. So I could see them definitely being involved with it and would love that at some point, you know, when they're teenagers or, you know, just depending on circumstances, what happens. But as far as passing it on or something, I don't know yet.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm just right now I'm trying to build it and see what kind of what happened.
Well, with all those son-in-laws you're going to have one day, they may be very skilled with their hands and may want to jump in there and help or take over.
Well, yeah.
So I'm sure because you are a calculated guy, you've been thinking about the future, and obviously the future's in the Lord's hands, but what is the future of Rockwall Bibles? What's if things keep growing and business keeps exploding, where do you want to be 5 years, 10 years down the road?
Sure. Yeah. So I think kind of the next steps, the things that I would love to do, one would be a storefront that we could have a workshop in and sell Bibles there and sell, you know, cause you can't really go. I don't know if you guys, if you're in Carbondale.
Yeah. Is that right? Right.
So I don't know if you have like a Christian bookstore there or if you don't even have a place you could go to look at a Bible.
Not at all.
Right. No. So, you know, Springfield, it has like a Mardell and, you know, you can go get a Bible there, but they don't really have like nice Bibles, you know, they don't have like premium stuff. And so I'd love to have a place where, you know, we could shoot video content in and it would be sort of a workshop and a Bible storefront. So that's kind of the next thing. And then ultimately, like if I kind of decide to grow it as big as I can, you know, I'd love to get into Bible printing and do some made in the USA Bibles, because that's something that isn't really a thing anymore. And we really had a heyday of it. I'm in the 70s, 80s, even early 90s.
Okay.
But then kind of in the early 2000s, everything has gone overseas.
Yeah.
And so some of those older Bibles that you'll see from like Thomas Nelson, you know, in the 80s, 90s, like you can get a really, you'll pick it up and be like, man, this is as nice as anything today. We just don't do it over here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so that would be really cool. And I would love to, you know, be able to control more aspects of the total Bible package. And
super cool. Something that may be inspiring. So Origin USA up in Maine. I don't know if you've heard of Origin.
Yeah.
Sam,
I have, yeah.
Shirt from tonight now. But one of the things that they did, and Pete Roberts, the owner there, they wanted to start making everything here. And it was basically dead knowledge. There was like very few people left that knew how to work on these machines. And if they were going to actually mill their own fabric and they're going to have to get these machines. I don't even know the proper terminology. Like I don't know the proper terminology in the book world, but they found this machine in an old abandoned mill and bought it. And there was only four people living that knew how to be a technician, that was a technician on these machines. And it was an older guy they brought in. They just figured it out one thing after another. And how cool would that be in some old print shop somewhere? You find some machine that you can use and bring back to life. And all of a sudden Rockwall Bibles, they're doing all the printing and everything in-house. Boy, that would be awesome.
Oh, I would. I mean, that is something, I'd really like to sink my teeth into sometime. So, yeah, I mean, that's such a cool story. And like the Made in the USA thing, there's stuff that comes with it. Like it used to mean something when something was made in the USA. It's like you can trust that corners weren't cut on this, that, you're going to get good customer service with it. There's sort of like these different bullet points that you say, see Made in the USA, and you ought to think that. And I think there is sort of a movement to reindustrialize America to some degree in these different areas. And I love to see companies start up who are really committed to that sort of thing. And so to do it with Bibles would be really one of the life goals.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing to think about all the challenges to do that, because things that we just had in factories all over the country, and they're so outsourced and
Right.
gone now that the knowledge really has been, you can lose knowledge in a particular industry
Yeah.
pretty quick. And to recover
Oh, yeah.
things like that and to do all of it here in America would be, that would be awesome. It seems like Springfield does have the base in that area, in that region, where if you had a storefront, that it has the population base to be able to sustain something like that. And here in our area, we don't have a Lifeway. We don't have, there used to be a Gospeland bookstore. We have nothing like that at all. And how great it would be to be able to walk into a bookstore and actually look and hold a Bible and then go through and see the different
Yeah.
options. And it was,
Yeah.
and I think younger generations are so ripe for that, because there's this longing, nostalgia is so in, because there's a longing for the material, the real, and I think we're primed culturally for even a storefront like you're talking about. Is that, I guess that's what you're thinking about as well.
Yeah, I think so. I'd love to see, I'd love, I'm kind of gathering examples of people who are doing similar things. And you'll see it in different industries. These storefronts who you would think, man, I can't believe that even exists, a storefront that makes duck calls, And it's like,
Right.
really? There's enough people that are going to go buy a duck call in a storefront? But I think there is something to that, Some people have this, like, I don't like to buy a lot of stuff, but when I buy something, I want it to last. I want it to be, a lot of times the highest quality if I'm going to use it over and over again. And so I think when people can actually feel it and not just see a picture of whatever it is, that definitely helps.
Absolutely, definitely. Well, I mean, it's been a great response, it seems like, on the internet since I've known about you and followed you along, and then I've held the Bible in my hands. I've been watching to see, and it seems like you got pretty good traction on the internet. And how is it that you continue to grow the business, not just locally, but then I guess is it just through X and through everything out
Yeah.
there?
Yeah. So, I mean, very few of my orders right now are local, I would say. It's pretty much all been social media. Right now, it's just been organic, posting on social media and doing different things and trying to grow accounts. So, there's been a few little things here and there that have like gathered quite a bit of attention. One was, Pete Hegseth was sworn in on one of our Bibles. I don't know if you
Oh, I
ever
didn't see
saw
that.
that, but that was one of the things that sort of cat was a catalyst for going full time. I kind of skipped over that, but
Okay.
there, we were getting a lot of interest and orders from that, and so there's been different things like that. I've just tried to make connections with people and do my best to, where there's something that's going to be mutually beneficial or we can support a podcast like yours. I'd love to do that and just build friendships, really.
Yeah, very cool. And I saw that Doug has one, and then Harbor Freight Harbor Freight Keith has one, and
Yep,
there's
that's
several
right.
pastors out there that have them. I'm preaching from it, loving it, and it's just been phenomenal as a preaching
Good.
Bible. The one, I don't know what specific Bible you got, where I mean, there's no reference, cross reference,
Yeah.
nothing on it. I mean, it's
Right.
just super
Yep.
clean. I don't know what that was, but I love it.
It's the LSB handy size. So, yeah, they've done Steadfast done a really great job with their text blocks and. That one specifically is printed in the Netherlands, which is kind of the top tier right now of Bible printing in the world. So, and that's really a good text block.
Yeah, very cool. Well, man, you get a hearty endorsement from me from all you're doing. And as far as those that may be interested in looking into your stuff, give a pitch. Why does somebody not just want, but man, they need it. They need a rock wall Bible.
Well,
Why do they
here's my
need one?
caveat. Don't go into debt to buy one.
That's
There's a lot of
good.
people. There's people that'll ask me, "Hey, do you take a firm or something, you know, all these, can you take payments for it? I say, no, don't do that.
Sound like a good Dave Ramsey. Sound like Dave Ramsey.
Yeah, right. But, you know, I mean, if you want to, I think the family Bible is something that a lot of people used to have, and it's not that common anymore. In fact, our culture just doesn't have a lot of heirloom type of passed down items. And I think a Bible that has been used, maybe as you've taken notes in over time, you know, if you're a young dad, maybe like buy a Bible for each of your kids and start writing notes in it. And if you're going to do that, make sure it's one that's going to last. And I can definitely make you one that's going to last a long time. And you'll enjoy using it too. That's another thing is, like you've mentioned, I think you have a lot of Bibles, but there's something too, like when you pick something up, it just feels good in your hand and it makes you want to open it and carry it around the house with you and just, you know, to use it. And I think that's a good thing on a Bible. So I know that's been true for me. So I'd like to encourage people, you know, if that's something you're interested in.
Yeah, man, that's so good. And I think in our world, because we look around the products that we have, and from clothing to everything that's in our home, and the things that are cheap, they fall apart, they get annoying, they're not fun to use. But the things that we've spent money on or we've saved for and we purchased that have that material quality and an aesthetic that we enjoy, there's just something different about it. And it's not that we it's not that we love stuff to a weird degree, but when you have something that's quality, it does something. You enjoy it. And mm-hmm. when it comes to opening a Bible, I mean, what better thing to enjoy than opening God's word and not just enjoying the word, but actually enjoying the Bible that you're reading the word from. And so, man, you're doing a great job with that. And I've certainly appreciated this. Okay. People want to find out more. Tell us where to go to find out more.
Yeah. So yeah, rockwallbibles.com. That's my website. You can place custom orders there. And then, you know, almost every Friday I drop Bibles. If you don't want to wait for a custom order, then I post Bibles to the website. But social media, I'm very active. I'm posting every day on Facebook, Instagram, and X. So you can also send me a DM on there, or adam@rockwallbibles.com.
Very cool. And hey, before we go, I did want to ask, I forgot, there was a story behind the sprinkle outside, or the whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah, the speckled edges.
Yeah. Could you just tell me about that? Because I saw you post somewhere about that, and that was pretty interesting. So go ahead and throw that out there before I let you go.
Okay, yeah. So I like to tell people this because a lot of people think that, oh, that's just like a, you know, it's a decorative thing, which it is, but it must be this new thing that's happening because I've never seen it before. But it's actually it's probably 500 years old when they started speckling the page edges of Bibles. So pretty soon after they start printing them, that was something that they did in order to protect the pages from dust and oil and dirt from your hands or anything that would get on it. And then the speckling is sort of to distract from any unevenness from the page dye. So what we'll do commonly, in fact, red was a common color that they used on them, you know, kind of signifying the blood of Christ sacrificed for sin. So it's been very common. It's an old practice to speckle the page edges of Bibles, and it does help kind of provide a barrier from, you know, stuff you don't want on the page edges.
Very cool. And the aesthetic is cool too. It just looks awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Very cool. All right, guys, we've been talking to Adam Johnson with the Rockwall Bibles. Adam, appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Great, Jared. Thanks for having me on.